You know, I'm here. We're here today on one of God's holy days. Of course, we rehearse these days as reminders. We're physical human beings, and we do physical things to help us stay in touch, I guess, with spiritual things. We've been in this holy day, 16 hours or whatever. And before we left home, we found we were still harboring sin right there in the house. Well, I hate to let it go. I mean, it was a piece of cake. And actually, my wife found it. It had seen better days. Well, you could throw it and it'd stay in one piece. So it's kind of like me, you know. It wasn't as fresh as it was at one time. So you never know when the sin is going to be found. It's there all the time. It's just a matter that we don't see it or understand or know it. And again, this time of year, things happen, and something, it seems, stirs people up. My wife gets these Facebook. I don't do Facebook myself. And it's amazing how many people that between our children, who are, you know, they're from 50 years old to 40, still, their friends are around that grew up in God's church. And I noticed that all at once the comments were becoming, I got to say, negative toward the church and toward their experience growing up. And it was kind of sad for me to see it and to be able to read it there on the internet. One lady, which she was the age of our oldest daughter, and of course we still know about her. We don't see her on a regular basis, but she was talking about regrets she had as a child in the church. And I mean, it was just sad to these things come up, because someone else had posted a long, whatever you call it, on there about the leadership of that church didn't even believe what they were teaching. It was all a scam, and, you know, on and on. And then she expressed her regrets. She said, "I regret their teaching of God being out to get me every time I made a mistake." You know, that is so sad to think about that. That's how she, apparently, I don't know if she felt that way or just now, that God was out to get her for her every mistake. You know, that is exactly opposite of what God is out to do. In reality, you know, is God out to get people for their mistakes? You know, does God seek those who have strayed away from the truth? Or are they just like a wandering star out there, you know, like in space where there's no gravity and there's nothing, and they're just out of control and they're drifting farther and farther away? You know, what should our attitude be toward those who we may feel like have forsaken the truth? But brethren, God is out to get us, but not to harm us. You know, He is out to get us, but He's out to save us. And just how do these days of unleavened bread teach us about God's salvation? You know, how when we eat the unleavened bread every day, or I'd say most every day. I don't know if we have to eat it every day, but we must not eat leavened bread every day. But is God out to get us, to punish us? You know, as we eat that unleavened bread each day, it's a reminder of what we are to become. I would like to turn to Genesis chapter 18. You know, I did respond to that, even though it wasn't sent to me. I saw it on there. And I don't know if it, because I don't know how to do it, whether it ever got to the lady, you know. But, you know, I just expressed sorrow for the way she felt, and sorry that it happened. And I just concluded by saying, if you would like to know what we're doing, go to the internet and go to UCG.com. And that, you know, I don't know if she saw it. How do you tell if they actually get your message? I don't know. But anyway, Genesis chapter 18, in verse 32. Anyway, I think we know the story here. And I may go back to verse 20. And the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry against it that has come to me, and if not, I will know. So then in verse 30 or 29, and here God is talking to Abraham. Then he spoke to him yet again and said, well, this is actually Abraham speaking. And he begins to question God, well, what if there's righteous people there? Are they going to die with the ungodly? And in verse 30, and he said, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak. Suppose 30 should be found there. And he said, I will not do it if I find 30. And Abraham continues on in verse 32, and he said, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak, but once more, suppose 10 should be found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for the sake of 10. So God said, no, he wouldn't destroy it. A very wicked, perverse city that was actually destroying themselves and that needed to be mercifully dealt with. And as we see in chapter 19, that the two angels went to Lot. Of course, Abraham knew Lot was in Sodom. And I'm sure that's where his mind was. You know, is Lot and his family going to perish with the rest? And I think I'll just start in verse 14 in chapter 19. So Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law, who had married his daughters, and said, get up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But to his sons-in-law, it seemed to be joking. And I certainly can identify with that, and probably many of you have, that have even family members or friends, and they just don't understand where the world is heading and what is actually right at the door, it seems. And as the morning went on in verse 15, dawn, the angel urged Lot to hurry, saying, arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city. And notice, and while he lingered, words, he was still lingering And God was patient. And, you know, he just didn't zap him. Okay, I gave you a chance. I'm basically out to get you anyway, and this is a good opportunity. But while he lingered, the man took hold of his hand and his wife's hand and the hands of his two daughters. And the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out and set him outside the city. So God demonstrates that he is very merciful. And I haven't checked this out when this was happening, but I was trying to find here back earlier. I believe in chapter 1, chapter 19, in verse 2, and he said, "How now, my lords, please turn in to your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet. Then you may rise early and go on your way." And of course they said, "No, but we'll spend the night in the open square." But he insisted strongly, so they turned in to him and entered his house. Then he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate it. He baked unleavened bread for them. So I haven't had time to check out the time there, but it seemed maybe it was significant. But they urged Lot. They almost had to carry him out of that wicked city to save him. I would like to, I may just quote Luke 15, verse 1 through 7. It says, "He leaves the 99 in the wilderness and goes after that which is lost." Now, God goes after that which is lost. I would like to turn to Matthew chapter 18, if you would. Matthew chapter 18. In verse 11. "For the Son of Man has come to save that which was lost." What do you think? In verse 12. Matthew 18. What do you think? "If a man has 100 sheep, and one of them goes astray, does he not leave the 99 and go to the mountain to seek the one that is straying? And if he should find it, assuredly I say to you, he rejoices more over that sheep than over the 99 that did not go astray." And I think we can understand that. In verse 14, "Even so, it is not the will of your Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish." Not one should perish. You know, of these little ones. In Luke 15, when it says he would leave the 99 in the wilderness. The wilderness is like a desert, a solitary wilderness. And that's what we're living in. We're living in a wilderness. No, the Son of Man has come to save that which was lost. As humans, we do go astray at times. And we need to understand that about ourselves and about other people. How easy it is to eat leaven. I mean, that is so easy. I could have a donut right now. You know, it'd just be pretty easy. It would be pretty easy. And that's how easy it is to sin. You know, all year we eat leaven. Well, that's what we do. We eat leaven all year. And before God calls us, we're eating leaven spiritually, wholesale, constantly. We wouldn't even want to taste a piece of that flat bread. We'd take a look at that, say, no thanks, I think I'll pass that on over. All our life, we've been in sin. Then calls us to repentance, God does, and we begin to learning to live an unleavened life. I won't turn to 1 Corinthians 5, but you know it says that now we are to eat the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. But brethren, sin is as easy as eating leaven. And God is out to get us, but to save us. We need to ask God to come after us and other people when we go astray. And the thing is, I think we need to ask before we go astray. Once people go astray, they're not really sometimes interested in asking for God's intervention. But you know, while we are know God, I think our prayers should be, God, when I begin to stray and I begin to forget, come after me, you know, as sheep. In the Adam Clark commentary, he's talking about sheep. He says, no creature strays more easily than a sheep. None is more heedless, none so incapable of finding its way back to the flock. When once gone astray, it will bleat for the flock and still run on in an opposite direction in the place where the flock is. And you know, that's what I was thinking about when this woman was writing about her regrets. You know, she can't find the flock. She's separated. And she's not really even wanting to find the flock. No creature is more defenseless than a sheep and more exposed to be devoured by dogs, wild beasts, even the fowl of the air seek their destruction. This person says, I have known ravens often attempt to destroy lambs by picking out their eyes so they can't see. I didn't know that. I'm not a sheep man. Mr. Hollingshead left to tell us if this is true, but this person seemed to say it is. Of course, once they're blind, then they can fall prey. And you know, God calls us sheep, and we're vulnerable to going astray and getting lost. You know, unleavened reminds us of how easy it is to go astray. How easy it is to eat leavened bread. And also, it reminds us of how great it is to be unleavened. We have time to think about this every time we go to eat. You know, we are to be unleavened. So one of the things we need to do is to realize and admit how easy it is for us to go astray and sin. And I may break my record this year and not eating leavened bread, but I'm notorious for forgetting and doing it. It's always somebody else's fault. They bring it in and, you know. So, and that's the way sin is. We don't necessarily set and plan that we're going to commit this sin and have it all figured out. Now, we could, but I say mostly we don't. It's just all at once, it comes from a direction that we're not prepared to resist or that we do not recognize. And these leaven goodies are everywhere, just as sin is. I would like to turn to Isaiah chapter 53. And of course, this chapter we read during the not during the Passover service, we have, but it's a very good chapter to read during this time of year in the Passover service. Isaiah 53, verse 6. All we like sheep have gone astray. That is just a fact. We all do go astray at times. And I know sometimes we may think that we're perfect and that we're without sin and, oh, I'd never do that. You know, we see someone that's definitely has gone astray. Oh, well, one thing about it, I'd never do that sin. Oh, no, I'm too good for that. Well, that's a very dangerous sign when we start thinking that, because we're being set up for a fall. In verse 6, all we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way, and the Eternal has laid on him the iniquity of us all. We cannot pay for that price. There's no way we can justify ourselves. But Christ has taken all that upon us, just as was brought out in the sermonette, ancient Israel, and how easy, I was thinking about as he was going through the sermonette, how easy and quickly they were willing to forget what they had been taught, witnessed, and had seen. We're human. We have God's Spirit, but we're still human as they are. And it's so easy for us to forget what we're supposed to be doing and how to do it. Where it says, we have all gone astray. The word there means to vacillate, to reel or to stray, to wander, to go out of the way. You know, to go out of the way. And many times it starts small, and the one step makes the next one easier. You know, we turn to our own way. And God says he's laid those iniquities upon Christ for us all. You know, we've all stumbled. When we stumble, we should want God to find us, to come after us. Now, I'm just asking that while we have it on our mind to say, God, when I fall into that situation, I want you to come after me. You know, come and get me, really, for whatever it takes. And sometimes it's some hard trials at times. When we stumble, we want God to find us. Or we can come to the point where we really don't care. And we sure do not want to go that far. So as we eat unleavened bread, think about how important it is that God has rescued us. You know, as a reminder, every day, 7 days, something that we do at least 3 times a day, plus all the snacks in between. And, of course, the unleavened bread has kind of limited the snacks now. I mean, how many wheat thins can you enjoy? Once people have gone astray, you know, they wander about for new things. They start wandering about. Jesus said, though, come to me and I will give you rest. As he brought out in the sermonette, in order to remain faithful to God, we have to constantly be going to Jesus Christ. And of course, that's in prayer, that's reading his word, and whatever. In Matthew 11, I believe I will turn there. Matthew 11, verse 28. Matthew 11, verse 28. Come to me, all you are labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. He says, take my yoke upon you. You know, a yoke, if you have a yoke of oxen, what do? You have two, they're tied together, right? They're pulling together. Okay, he said, take my yoke. In other words, be yoked up with me. Be yoked up with Christ. If we're yoked up with Christ, that load's going to be a lot easier to pull. And he's invited you to take up his yoke. For I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy. In other words, it can mean like well fitted. A yoke that's not fitted, you know, is going to rub and create sores on the animals. But he said, this is well fitted, and my burden is light. You know, compared to Satan's way, it's very light burden, you know. The word there, rest, means to recover and to collect strength. When we feel like that we're just, hey, I'm becoming exhausted. I'm don't know if I can keep on in this way. That's when we need to go and to God and say, look, take this burden and carry it with me. You know, carry it with me and give me rest. Refresh me and help me to be calm. You know, the same word, I won't turn there, but it's in Matthew 26 and verse 45 when Jesus came and his disciples were asleep. And he said, well, sleep on. Take your rest. It's the same word he used there. Take your rest. You know, take your rest. And we need to be reminded to be sure and always take that rest with Christ and not neglect going to him to help us pull the load, whatever it might be at that time. We need to always ask God to seek and to refresh us spiritually. During this time, we can be reminded of that every time we eat. And brethren, knowing our own vulnerability to becoming lost, we should care about others who have gone astray. You know, when we come to church services, why are we coming? To see what we can get? Well, I want to hear the sermon. I want to see if I can get pumped up. You know, we're coming not just for ourselves. We're coming for other people. You know, we're coming to exhort and encourage other people. You know, we should care about others who may be having a hard time and on the verge of going astray. You know, I probably, if people wanted to say it, how many of you know those who have been offended? Maybe you're being offended right now with me up here talking. I mean, you could be offended. I know I've been up speaking and I've looked out and I think, you know, I'm offending someone. I can tell by looking at them. In some of the crazy things I might say, or just, you know, without thinking, some of the things I do and say. Well, you know, there we could be someone being on the verge of being offended right here today. And when we come here, we can help and encourage one another. You know, someone may be drifting off or being deceived. You know, by things that's going on. Because in this Facebook, I mean, once this started, ex-church people all begin to chime in. You know, oh, that cult. You know, yeah, I remember third tithe of the year. They were living it up out there, and we were near starvation. And it was amazing. People coming out of the woodwork. You know, right here before Passover, it makes you think, well, somebody's stirring this up, you know, bringing it to people's attention. And maybe we've seen corruption in high places and caused people to go astray. That's definitely a possibility. But as people's question me, I've said, you know what? When I came to the church and came in that building the first time, you know why I came? It wasn't because of Herbert W. Armstrong. I mean, indirectly it may have been because he revealed stuff to me. But I was there because of the truth. Because I thought that's where the truth is. Not because of any man. You know, seeing corruption. This young woman, which I call her young. I know she must be in her 50s by now. You know, she said that her father went fishing on the Sabbath. And I knew her father and her mother. And the next Monday, said two ministers were at the house. And they said, "Sir, do you want to go fishing or do you want to keep the Sabbath?" And he said, "You know, I think I'll go fishing." And she said, "That disrupted our family. You know, I don't know the details about that, but it was a blow to that family. Maybe it should have been handled differently, but you know, we don't know all the facts either. Whether it was just gone fishing one day, or whether there was other things that was leading up to it. But now this woman has hung on to this all these years and has been offended by it. So, you know, we need to pray for people. There's probably a lot of people out there that way. We need to care about other people. Because people have had reasons to be offended and to be hurt. There's no question about it. I'd like to turn to Jeremiah chapter 50. In Jeremiah chapter 50 and verse 6. It says, "My people have been lost sheep. Their shepherds have led them astray." That's possible. He said, "Their shepherds have led them astray. That they have turned them away on the mountains." As we remember when we read back in Matthew 18, it said that he leaves the 99 and goes to the mountain to find the one. You know, they've turned them away on the mountains, and they've gone from mountain to hill. They have forgotten their resting place. And all who have found them have devoured them, and, you know, just like a lost sheep can be devoured in so many ways. And they have devoured them, and their adversaries said, "We have not offended because they have sinned against the eternal, the habitation of justice, the eternal hope of their fathers." No, there have people, I guess you could say, have had legitimate cause to be offended, but they have forgotten also what they were called from if they're offended to that point. But still, we need to be thinking about these people. Let's look at 1 Samuel chapter 2. God gives us these examples. And we know what how the Pharisees, in Jesus' time, you know, they laid heavy burdens on people. And as Christ said, they wouldn't lift their little finger to help. 1 Samuel chapter 2. I think I'm in the right book. First Samuel 2. In verse 12. Now Eli was a high priest. Now in verse 12, 1 Samuel chapter 2. Now the sons of Eli were corrupt. They did not know the Lord. And the priest's custom with the people was that when any man offered a sacrifice, the priest's servant would come with a three-pronged flesh hook of his hand, and while the meat was boiling, then he would thrust it in, and he would take what he wanted. And verse 15, and also before they burned the fat, the priest's servants would come and say to the man who sacrificed, "Give me meat for roasting to the priest, for he will not take boiled meat from you, but raw." And if the man said to him, "They should really burn the fat first, then you may take as much as your heart desires," he would then answer him, "No, but you must give it to me now, and if not, I will take it by force." Notice in verse 17, "Therefore the sin of the young men was very great before the Eternal, for the men abhorred the offering of the Lord." You know, the priests should not be doing that. They were in a position of representing God, and they were offending people and hurting people in this way. And in verse 17... No, that's not the one I want. Let's see. Oh, in verse 22. "Now Eli was very old, and he heard everything his sons did to all Israel, and how they lay with the women who assembled at the door of the tabernacle of meeting." You talk about bad examples in leadership. I mean, God gives us examples of this. You know, laid with the women at the door of the tabernacle. So people sometimes have reason to be offended, carnally speaking, of course, because they lose sight of God and His calling and what it's all about. And people need prayers, and I think God expects us to pray for His intervention for people. If we see discouragement or hurt feelings or an offended brother, do something. Maybe a special prayer. I mean, it's really hard. It's really a delicate thing to deal with someone that's offended and hurt. It's a very delicate thing to deal with. So prayer, it seems to be a special prayer for the people that have been offended or gone astray. Ask God, what can we do to help? You know, our own children have gone astray. My wife and I have children that, I mean, were baptized in the church and no longer go to church, period. Anywhere. Which, maybe that's good that they don't go anywhere, maybe not. But, you know, there's people out there that way. And when leadership distorted God's truth, it had a great impact on many people, on those little ones that Christ said, you know, we want to be sure we don't offend them. You know, I think it would be proper to ask God to go after these lost sheep. There's a lot of them out there. I mean, as I saw on Facebook, I mean, there's a lot of them out there. And now they have children and they have grandchildren. Those same ones. You know, in Jude 22, I think I will turn there. It's very short. Jude 22. I don't know just how to tell you to do this, but think about it. Jude 22, verse 23. Well, we'll begin I'll begin in verse 21, Jude 21. Keep yourselves in the love of God. And that's our main responsibility, is keep ourselves in the love of God. If we keep ourselves in the love of God, maybe we can deal with these situations wisely. I know that we can. But if we're not keeping ourselves in the love of God, you know, sometimes we just offend people more by saying, well, you need to be doing this, and you're sinning, and you're out of line. So we need to do it. Be sure we're doing it with the love of God. Keep yourselves in the love of God, looking for the mercy of our Lord Jesus Christ unto eternal life. Verse 22, and on some have compassion, making distinction. I forget just what that means. In other words, it means on those who are doubting. On those who are doubting. You know, sometimes when we see things, well, why is God allowing that? You know, am I on the wrong train here? Where am I going? Why is God allowing that to happen? You know, when some are doubting. But verse 23, but others save with fear, pulling them out of the fire, hating even the garments defiled by the flesh. And it means on some have mercy with fear. Yes, there's a lot we need to be thinking about during these days of unleavened bread to bring home what through the months, it's been a while since a holy day, and just as ancient Israel marched out of there, and within 30 days, seems like they forgot everything they had seen. It's a little amazing. As Mr. Burke brought out in that, it's just amazing how soon we could begin to go astray. Don't just write people off, I guess is what I want to say. You know, we could say, well, they knew the truth, so they ought to know better. It's good enough for them. But, you know, let them go. I don't think that's the right attitude, personally. I don't think it is. And I won't turn there, but in Exodus 23, verse 4, it says, if your enemy's ox or his ass goes astray, what are you supposed to do? It's your enemy's animal. You're supposed to pin it up and help it. You know, if it goes astray, that means reel off or go astray, you help it. In Deuteronomy 22, verse 1 through 4, it says, if you see your neighbor's animal go astray or something, help lift it up. When we come to church, I hope we come to church that we help lift each other up. You know, think about it. I mean, people make mistakes, and they, well, I don't think I want to talk to that person because I know some things that they're doing, you know. But think how easy it is to eat leaven. It's really easy. Take it from someone who knows. It's easy. And sin is easy to fall into. And I don't want to excuse anybody for living in sin. I don't mean that at all. But I think we should keep in mind and ask God to go after and to help us to help those that are having problems. And we definitely need to ask God, while we're able to ask God, to seek us if we go astray. You know? I don't want to wait till I've gone astray and I don't really care then. I want God to go after me. You know, if we do our part now, God will help us and He will find us when we need it. If you would turn to Psalms 119. Psalms 119. in verse 67. We all know that I thought this was written by maybe David. I was assuming that. I don't know for sure. But in verse 67, he says, "Before I was afflicted, I went astray." Which he went astray, and apparently it took some affliction to get him back on the right track. "But now I keep your word." Words, I hate to say it for myself, but if I need to be afflicted, that's better than leaving me astray and leaving me wandering about. And the astray means to stray or to sin ignorantly. During these times of unleavened bread, we should be looking, as we did before the Passover, continue to look for that leaven in our life. Just as we do, we continue to find things in our homes or cars or whatever. And we need to, more than that, look in our own self, in our own lives. In Psalms 139, in verse 23. Here it says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxieties. And if there is any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." That's something that we just have to do. We normally, it's very hard to see our own sins and our own faults. It's very hard to do. Every time we have to eat that unleavened bread, I'd hope that we would think about that. Search me, God. I've searched my house, I've searched my car, I've found the leaven, I've put it out. Now it's time to search myself spiritually. God, search me. Ask God to go after us. Sometimes God does go after the lost sheep by afflicting those sheep and helping them to wake up. You know, we're supposed to rejoice in affliction and trials because that's what's needed to save us, right? Sometimes it's just, that's what it comes down to. We need to be afflicted. I will turn to 1 Peter chapter 1. 1 Peter chapter 1. In verse 3. "As His divine power has given to us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of Him who called us to glory and truth." You know, God had to reveal this knowledge to us. We didn't come up with this on our own. "By which have been given to us exceedingly great and precious promises, that through these you may be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world." So at times we are afflicted. If we would turn over to was I in 2 Peter? I don't know where I am. You know, God, what does God say? Who does He call? The base things and the low things. See, if I was a smart man, I wouldn't be here. I'd be out playing golf or something, you know. So you know who God calls, right? In 1 Peter chapter 4:12, "Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you as though some strange thing happened to you." As David said, Before I was afflicted, I went astray. That's the reason we're told to rejoice in trials, because that's what we need sometimes. We don't want to continue to be going astray. You know, in verse 16, the same chapter, 1 Corinthians 4:16. If yet anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in this matter. My point here was, just because someone's afflicted doesn't mean that they've gone astray and they're a sinner. It could be, but that's not necessarily true. It says, yet if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in this manner. It's an opportunity to glorify God in this manner. For in verse 17, for the time has come for the judgment to begin at the house of God, and if it begins with us first, what will it be the end of those who do not obey the gospel? So we're at the time of being judged now. So there are going to be times when we're going to have some affliction and some problems that could come our way. But we don't want to suffer because we are being ungodly. You know, the ungodly is a hard way of life. We don't want to suffer in that way. But because we're afflicted doesn't always mean that we've gone astray. But it is a tool that God may use. And so if you suffer for righteousness' sake, you should be happy in that. So we can see why we should rejoice in trials at times. Sometimes God is speaking to us through a trial. In James chapter 1, I believe that's where that James chapter 1. James 1, verses 2 through 4. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. So sometimes we just have trials to produce patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. So we do want God to come and get us if we go astray. We want God, not as this woman felt, that God was just out to get her, like he's waiting there and he's watching her, and when she slips up, man, he's going to get her. He's going to do some kind of a punishment. You know, you're trouble's going to come on you, or whatever. You know, you're going to go through the great tribulation, or you're going to be in a car wreck, or something bad's going to happen if God's out to get you. You know, eating unleavened bread only can be a challenge. Now, if we could mix it up and have a little unleavened bread and a little leavened bread, that'd be pretty easy to accomplish. You know, we can have a little unleavened bread, and then, yeah, I think I'll have a Twinkie to go with that, and that'd kind of balance it out. But just unleavened bread can be a real challenge. Just being sinless can be a real challenge. I mean, that can be really hard. Eating leaven's easy. Living sinless is hard. It's hard at times. Sin can be very easy. Living sinless is hard because just being flesh, it's easy to just sin. But Christ said that his yoke is easy if we rely on him. We need to help one another. You know, being at church, encouraging each other to do the right thing. to just do the right thing at the right time. We want God to come after us if we're going to stray. Certainly would hope, oh God, come and get me when I wander off onto the mountain or down the lane or whatever. Come and get me. Whatever it takes, come after me. God is out to get us, but it's for salvation and our own good. You know, these days of unleavened bread remind us to remain sinless. Concentration of 7 days. Every time we go, it's something you have to think about all the time. I mean, to really eat unleavened bread and not eat leaven, it's just everything you do. I mean, you don't know whether you could chew a piece of gum. You know, you're reading on things. Is this got leaven in it? I don't know. I don't even know what all the leaven is. I read some of those on the carton. I don't have a clue what they are. Is that leaven? I don't know. So as humans, we don't know all the time when we're getting in deep water. I'd like to conclude by reading Isaiah 53, back to Isaiah 53.